Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Let's talk about hydropower. That's because this week, lawmakers in the Massachusetts House unveiled a long-awaited proposal that gives offshore wind and hydropower new prominence in the state's mix of energy sources. And there's a lot of excitement around the idea. Here's Governor Charlie Baker.
I would describe it at this point as a very strong bill that's built around the idea of expanding our portfolio, diversifying our energy sources, and incorporating big slugs of hydro and wind into our portfolio here in Massachusetts and across New England, and I think that's a good thing.
Now, those big slugs, as Baker put it, include calls for importing an additional 2,400 megawatts of Canadian hydro and offshore wind power. But environmentalists like George Bacharach of the Environmental League of Massachusetts say that's not big enough.
We do need to increase and diversify our energy portfolio, and that means more offshore wind and more hydro and more solar. And the House bill simply has put its big toe in the water. They need to go further.
Well, that got us thinking. It's easy to get excited about Massachusetts making a push for greener energy sources. But hydropower, especially Canadian hydropower, is not without its controversies. So we wanted to take a step back today and explore the story of the biggest hydro player in Canada. That, of course, is Hydro-Québec. And we're joined now from Ottawa by Sean McCarthy. He's a national business correspondent for The Globe and Mail, and he's here to help us walk through the story of Hydro-Québec. Sean McCarthy, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Meghna.
So first of all, can you just give us a sense as to how big Hydro-Québec is?
Well, it's certainly the largest corporation in Quebec that operates in Quebec, and it's government-owned. And it is got a monopoly not just on the production of power, but on the distribution and export of power. And it is a huge benefit to the people in Quebec. It generates a lot of revenue for the province and keeps their power rates as low as anything on the continent.
Right. I mean, we were looking at some financials from Hydro-Québec today and saw that for the most recent figures we could find, I believe it was 2015, Hydro-Québec paid, more than $2 billion Canadian dollars to the Quebec government as being the sole shareholder, as you said.
That's
and
right.
And in terms of the amount of power that Hydro-Québec produces, I found that they say that they produce 29.3 terawatt hours in net exports of clean energy. And I did some calculations based on the average U.S. Residential home consumption of electricity, and that seems to be enough to power 2.68 million U.S. homes, based, again, on average annual residential electricity consumption. So it's huge. How important is expanding Hydro-Québec's exports to Massachusetts? How important is that for the province?
Well, it's been their long-term vision. I mean, it's they've been a major exporter into New York and New England for a long time. New York, in particular, this has been going back to James Bay back in the 70s, where they flooded a large portion of the upper part of the province, and it is a huge land mass, probably as big as New England itself. So it is an important industrial strategy for the province. It generates a lot of revenue. The export sales help them maintain, you know, employment and jobs, but it's not just Quebec. Now you have Nova Scotia and Newfoundland and a lot of provinces wanting to get into the act, Manitoba out in the Midwest, to sell hydropower, which Canada has in abundance, to U.S. utilities, which have largely been coal or maybe diesel oil fired and are trying to reduce their climate footprint.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there is a big push to move away from those fossil fuel powered plants. But, you know, as I mentioned in the introduction to our conversation, hydro is not without its controversies. I mean, I'm thinking the big projects around the world, major dams in India, Three Gorges in China. I mean, there's always this associated concern about the effect that creating those giant reservoirs have in terms of the people who live in and around the project area, and then of course the follow-on issues that come from that. I mean, can you just briefly describe to us some of the environmental concerns of residents and especially Native peoples who live in and around the area that Hydro-Québec has flooded?
Sure, the current projects, it's called romaine, like romaine lettuce, romaine. They're having still some challenges from the local indigenous population called Innu, and you know they are worried about mercury. You know, sometimes you get a concentration of heavy metals and mercury in the fish that they rely on. You get it disrupts the water course and can really do serious harm to the ecological balance that you know you might have the local people might have relied on wild rice that grows in the area, or certainly the fish, and it just really is very hard on the habitat there. I mentioned James Bay back in the 70s, the Cree First Nations who were up in northern Quebec in that region of northern Quebec did a landmark deal with the province, and they have benefited tremendously from the agreement. There is still, you know, impact on their land, but at least in that case, they were partners in the development, if you will, and got significant payout and revenue and jobs from it. And
right.
The Innu are looking for that as well as Native people are right across Canada now when these projects happen. The other big challenge that you get with these large hydro projects and the export projects and even the wind projects, where you generate it tends to be a long way away from where you need it.
So you got to get the power there. Line. Yeah, exactly. And I mean,
people don't like transmission lines crossing their land and their scenic landscapes. That's for sure.
Well, and that's been a problem in Canada, but also as you know, a huge problem here in New England. I mean, there's been an ongoing fight in New Hampshire to stop the Northern Pass, which would bring power from Hydro-Québec down into the rest of New England. Right.
Right. It's a tough one because you know we you know environmental issues play out in a lot of different ways, and in order to get off natural gas and diesel fuel, you need renewable power. I know the New England power producers say that they can produce a lot more, a lot closer to the market, so you don't have the massive transmission lines. You know, I think most people would suggest that efficiency and conservation and locally sourced power is the best route to go first, but you have to do a really hard-headed and pragmatic assessment as to whether that's enough or you're going to fall back on the old sources that you're trying to get rid of. And you see that in some states and provinces that you know had big plans, but the people don't like to see their power prices go up tremendously either. Ontario is an example where they phased out coal and the cost of that, people are finding their power bills going up, and there's always a bit of a backlash on that.
Well, Sean, so on that point, let me ask you, I mean, the Massachusetts bill that was unveiled this week includes in its proposal the idea that that the state would seek long-term contracts with Canadian hydro and offshore power producers, 15 to 20-year contracts. And I understand that in and of itself is producing a bit of concern in Canada.
Well, I think it's producing concern both in Canada and the U.S. I think the New England Power Generators Association says, you know, why are you hiving off a good part of the market to give to the Canadians on a long-term basis or someone who's far off for that? In Canada, the concern is that you're locking in relatively cheap prices for your exports at a time when down the road you may need them yourself. So, you know, the long-term nature of the contracts is problematic, but if you're going to build that large infrastructure, you need the contracts to back that up. Nobody's going to build a you know, multi-billion-dollar transmission line from Quebec down to Massachusetts or from another company is looking to do it from Nova Scotia under the ocean to around the Boston area, And nobody's going to invest in that if it's not backed up by long-term contracts,
right.
Or at least that's what we're told.
So there are a lot of complications and controversies surrounding what on the surface does seem like a good idea to get more green energy here to Massachusetts. We'll be following this story from both sides of the border here. Sean McCarthy, he is the Ottawa-based national business correspondent for The Globe and Mail. He covers the global energy beat there. Would love to talk to you again as this progresses, Sean. Thank you so very much.
Happy to do it. Thanks, Meghna.
We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.